Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 16, the divine and demoniac natures, text number 13 to 15. Idam adyamaya labdham imam prapse manoratham. Idam asti dam apime. Bhavishyati punardhanam. Asamaya takshatroor anishe chaparanapi ishraham aham bogi siraham balavan suki idamadyamaya labdham imam prapse manoratham Idam asti dam api me. Bhavishyati punardhanam. Asamaya takshatroor. Anishe chaparanapi. Ishvaraham aham bogi. Siraham balavan sukhi. A little louder. Idamaya maya labdham. Imam prapasye manoratham. Prapasye. Go ahead. Idam asti dam apime. Bhavishyati purardhanam. Asamaya hatakshatroor Hayishe chaparanapi Ishvaraham aham bogi Siraham balavan sukhi. Ladies, Idamaya maya labdvam. Idam imam prapse manoratham. Idam asti amapime. Bhavishyati punardhanam. Asamaya hatakshatroor. Hanishe chaparanapi. Ishvaraham aham bogi. Siraham balavan sukhi. Idamaya maya labdvam. Imam prapse manoratham. Idam asti dam apime. Bhavishyati purardhanam. Asamaya hatakshatroor. Nishe chaparanapi. Ishvaraham aham bogi. Siraham balavan sukhi. Translation. Well, actually, the last line is, last two lines. Adyo bidhanavanasmi konyosti sadrishomaya. Yakshe dashami modisha ityagana vimohitaha. Translation, no purport. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him. And my other enemies will also be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Pristai Bhutai, Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamitanamane, Namaste Sarasvatam Deve, Gauravani Pracharane, Nirvishesha Shnivadi Paskatya De Siddharne. What makes these verses unique, it's probably there are three verses here, or 13 to 14, three texts, and this probably every materialist knows these verses. These are the verses they can quote from Bhagavad Gita by memory. And we can also probably identify to some extent with them. And generally speaking, people think this is perfectly normal. Krishna is simply stating he's saying the demoniac people, well, that means that practically everyone is a demon, because everyone thinks like that. And people will say, are you calling me a demon? Because I'm thinking like that. And we say, no, Krishna is calling you a demon. We're simply repeating what he says. Now the point is that no one will be able to, people think like this, at least partly. Everyone is very proud of their wealth. Everyone is thinking that they're actually enjoying. Everyone's, whatever their family is like, at least to the outside they have some pride. My son's a lawyer. My son's a doctor. My son's an accountant. My son is this. My daughter married so-and-so. I have so much in stock, in the stock market. All the people who are against me, they somehow or another, God takes care of them. So people, this is the general mentality. And this, to a certain extent, we may also have some of this mentality ourselves. But it's considered demoniac because the basic principle of Krishna consciousness is that everything belongs to Krishna. Simple concept, very difficult to accept. Because as soon as we accept it, then we become liberated. For instance, if you find out that Bill Gates lost $1 billion, do you start lamenting? Bill Gates, oh poor Bill Gates, he lost $1 billion. Start crying. I can't sleep at night. I'm so disturbed because Bill, who could care less? Let him lose $20 billion for all we care, because it doesn't belong to us. And if Bill Gates gains $20 billion, we still only get two chapatis a day. Makes no difference to our lives. Similarly, as soon as we accept that everything belongs to Krishna, then we're no longer entangled in our hankering lamentation, our pride due to possessing something. But the only way of getting out of this conception is not just to hear about it in the Bhagavad Gita and think about all these demoniac people, they're nonsense, they believe that things belong to them. You know, we're pure devotees and we never at all ever have the consideration that anything, including my own body, ever belonged to me. Or that I ever had a thought that any bad could come to one of my enemies. I only think, let my enemies be blessed with all auspiciousness. This devotee is going around the world criticizing me. Let him go to Vaikuntha. And I'll go to hell. That I'm the enjoyer. I never think I'm enjoying anything. I only think of Krishna's happiness. When I sit down at the feast, I'm only thinking, how will Krishna enjoy when I eat? I never think I'm perfect. Whatever people tell me, I'm immediately receptive to find out how I can improve myself. I never think I'm perfect in any way. These consciousnesses, they're in every conditioned soul. It's more prominent in those who are not Krishna conscious. On the other hand, those who are trying to become Krishna conscious, we have to understand that the only way of getting out of this entanglement, this consciousness, because after all, it's a consciousness. It's the consciousness that separates us from Krishna. If we think this is my wealth, this is mine, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the controller, then where does Krishna fit into our consciousness? The only practical way of getting out of it is to utilize whatever assets we have and try to figure out how to utilize them in Krishna's service. Then if we do that, then Krishna makes us aware, the Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tam. He gives us the intelligence by which we can make progress in Krishna consciousness. But without practical engagement in Krishna's service, it just remains a theory. Unless we're practically engaging our energies in Krishna's service, then all these words or how Krishna is the enjoyer, how Krishna is the controller, how Krishna is this and that, but it'll all be theory rather than realized. So we're trying to engage ourselves practically, our wealth, our words, our intelligence, our lives, in the service of Krishna. And by doing that, engage others, people's money, their other people's lives, well, their money, their words, their intelligence and their life in Krishna's service. If we engage our lives and our intelligence, our words, and for this endeavor, then we'll get over this misconception, because Krishna will make us aware how there is nothing different from him, and that he is the ultimate sanctioning agent and controller of everything. He is actually enjoying, and when he enjoys, then we actually become happy. We can practically experience that. Here is the 16th chapter, practically the chapter before the ending chapter, because Krishna has explained so many things about how to engage our energies in his service through karma yoga, how to engage our knowledge in his service through jnana yoga or astanga yoga, engage our meditation, our minds, and Krishna's meditating on him, and ultimately by bhakti yoga, loving service. But as usual, Krishna is indicating that there is the anchor that's in the consciousness of the conditioned soul, where he's imagining himself to be separate from Krishna, and he's imagining himself to have all these different qualities and all these different plans for the future, how he's going to be happy separate from Krishna, how Krishna, he can be 1 foot on the land, 1 foot on the boat, and it's going to be all right. Even if the boat pulls out, somehow or another he'll manage. Somehow or another I'll have my material life and my Krishna consciousness too. Of course, it doesn't mean we can't have a family, but the family should be for Krishna. It should be, the children should be for Krishna. Otherwise, if we think there it's my children, then what we make plans to raise them and for our service. Let them, you know, then we never put enough effort into creating a good gurukul where they can be trained to become Krishna conscious from their birth. Instead, we have children, and then we send them out to the slaughterhouses and hope in the future they'll become devotees. But the karmis, they don't send the children to the gurukul and hope in the future they'll become good demons. But we have some faith that let me send my children to the slaughterhouse. And after they become a babbling idiot by the time they're 18 years old, then if they want, they can become a devotee. after they're taught for 18 years or 13 years that there's no God, we all came out of monkeys, out of nothing, and that the whole purpose of life is make as much money as you can, exploit the material nature whatever as much as you can, enjoy your senses as much as you can, and after being trained for 13 years like that, suddenly they're going to fall in love with a cowherd boy in an ancient village called India. Now we have to become serious that there's very basic principles for Krishna consciousness, and unless we apply them practically in our lives, not for a few years as a brahmachari, and then we get a free pass to do whatever we want as a householder, and then at the end of our lives, we don't know what to do. Or as they say, people usually spend their first part of their lives as making as much money as possible. They sacrifice their health. And then the last part of their life, they spend all that money that they sacrifice their health for to buy back health. So we have to be a little aware of what the principles are and see if we live our lives, base our lives, whether brahmachari or grihastha or sannyas or vanaprastha, on these basic principles, then Krishna will reveal himself to us. We'll become Krishna conscious. Our lives, our activities will improve. Otherwise, we can keep on reading this verse until time immemorial from now, and unless we change our practical activities, we won't understand why Krishna put it in there, why he's insulting all these demons all the time. I thought he was supposed to be a nice person. I thought he loves everyone. He seems to be insulting a lot of people here. But Krishna is very practical. He's not very sentimental. Matter of fact, as we find out later, he says that all these people are demons. I cast them into the lower species of life. And they can't obtain me. I just push them down, down, down. Down, boy, down. You don't love me. Well, I don't love you either. Down. Just push you down. He's trying to get up, boss. You'll push him down further. Now then we wonder why Krishna is saying Tanaham Dvishitam Kuran. Those who are envious and mischievous, the lowest among men, I cast into the lower species. Into the lower species, you fool. For I cast you. Into the burning fire. Puff. So it sounds like the God, the cruel God, just pushing people down into the lower species, sending them into the burning fire. Now we have to understand Krishna doesn't want that. Therefore he's explaining this is what the result is. If we maintain this mentality, then we'll have to have this result. Part of the result is that we learn. We learn that if we want to gratify our senses, human form of life is not a very good place to do it. The animals may be thinking, I'm the lord of this place, like the dogs. They think, I'm the lord of the street. And they pick up their foot and they mark out the place. And if another dog comes, it's mine, mine. So this is the mentality, if this is the mentality of human beings, they're more or less the same. Prabhupada would say, they go to the United Nations, but they have this dogish mentality. So one big nation stands up at the United Nations and goes, rawr, I'm big dog. Watch out, I bite. Rawr, rawr. And some other nation stands up and goes, I also bite. Rawr. And a little nation goes, pee pee, I'm a nice dog. I don't bite anyone. Don't bite me, please. So they go there and they're just dogs. They just bark at each other. So not only the United, what's the speaker of the United, they're supposed to be the educated, diplomatic, peace in the world, And if they're acting like dogs, imagine what the general people are acting like, the ordinary people. Who knows what's going on in these people's houses? Maybe Slovenia is better than America, but 500 murders that happen every week in America. And I think something like 90% are between husband and wife and children. So you can't even live happily and peacefully with a husband and wife and children. Who are you going to live happily with? Because people have this dog mentality. So unless previously people had a little God consciousness, I'm sure even in Slovenia, probably people even used to go to church on Sunday. Isn't that right? Now many people go to church on Sunday? They still go? They go there and they drink a little wine, get a little cracker to eat. And then they have barbecues here at the churches. It's not a social event. In America, the only way they can attract people to go to the church, sometimes you have your Sunday barbecue after the lecture. Let there be peace in the world and harmony and joy, and let's go out and have the barbecue. I like the ribs. Give me the spare ribs. Peace and joy. But in any case, people used to be more God conscious than they are in the Western world. Isn't that right? In Ljubljana, people go to church.
Yeah. I was a couple of weeks ago on Sunday in school church here in the center.
Did you listen to the lecture?
Yeah, a little bit.
What did they say? Jesus, everyone is in Jesus and Jesus is in them. What's the symptom? How do you know that Jesus is in them? Jesus, well, that's nice. If Jesus was in them, then they probably would follow Jesus' commandments. What's that? Her appearance day. Disappearance day. She disappeared on this day. Where'd she go? Heaven. What's she doing there? But what do they think Mary is doing there? Sounds pretty boring. She had more to do down here. Oh, okay. Anyhow, at least in most countries, even if they do go to church, and I think in most European countries, church attendance is slackened. For that reason, many of the churches are empty. Like in Poland, for instance, which is another Catholic country. If you go there, or even Croatia, you see many empty churches. They're just not. Even if you have a priest, he has to do a sermon in two or three different churches, and just a few old people come. And in the churches, there's less priests than before. And therefore, one priest has to go to many empty churches to give the sermon on Sunday. In general, I think religion is declining, especially in the Western world, because there's no knowledge. People are keeping the mentality that I'm the Lord, this is mine, I'm the enjoyer here, God will help me kill my enemies. etc., etc. The same mentality that Krishna describes as demoniac. Basically, that's what people have. You don't agree?
The Christian world is mainly shrinking. Islam is very strong.
Yeah. Very merciful.
There are other ancient religions also, they're not really.
Well, Mohammedism, they don't have this idea that this is my wealth. Oh, they're all just freely distributing their wealth, utilizing all their wealth in God's service. They don't think they don't have the idea this is my enemy and I've killed them. My other enemies will also be killed. They're all into universal brotherhood. Is that right? Okay. But real religion is, well, it has to be God consciousness. You just can't say, I belong to a particular religion, but there's no sense of, for instance, thou shalt not kill. A religion that's based upon killing cows, it's not going to develop finer sentiments very easily. Let's just speak of religions that are against deities, that don't believe that God is actually a person, has certain drawbacks. Although they could practice their religion, because religion is meant to restrict things, but as far as not having this particular demoniac mentality, it's pretty hard to agree. Real religion means to follow the laws of God. But I don't think it's within the laws of God to kill animals. So there's going to be some defect there. In any case, God consciousness doesn't seem to be all-time developing in Kali Yuga. People aren't developing cleanliness, mercy, truthfulness, or austerity. So if these things aren't being developed, then how can we say that religion is spreading? People are engaged in illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling. And how can religion be spreading?
I thought you meant religion as an institution.
Well, there are so many institutions. Prabhupada even said one time, organized crime means the government. So that's also an institution, but they're organized in order to take everyone's wealth away from each other. So institutions, no, what we really mean by real religion is something that spreads austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. Otherwise, as Prabhupada writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's a malecha dharma. Religion for the malechas. Because in public we don't decry any religion, because we appreciate anyone who follows some principles of religion, but we understand what the real what the principles are. If we become powerful like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then we can speak with the Kazi and convince him, to give up eating meat. That it says in your scripture that, the sacrifices are meant to restrict animal slaughter. They're not meant to encourage it. But we may not be so powerful at this time. So we appreciate at least they follow some principles of religion. But we should understand what the real principles of religion, what the standard is. But as long as animal slaughter is going on, then we'll have all these wars that are going on. People will suffer greatly as a result of especially cow slaughter. So in India, I think they made a law that there can't be any cow slaughter in India.
In some states, or
Well, in general, throughout all of India. But how well it's being instituted, that I don't know. But this idea that it's my religion to cut your throat is not a very good religion. Our religion is to cut the throat of the cow. We don't agree with such religions. We may not be able to stop it. Therefore, we don't argue, and it'd be futile to try and stop it. But there's going to be reactions for killing cows. Anything else? Yes. Yeah, it's better. People at least recognize God. But just like if you in jail and you say, well, the warden gave me this jail cell. Well, that's not very good. He gave you a jail. So you say, God gave me these things. He gave me a jail because I'm a criminal. Well, that's not a very good statement. Stop being a criminal. Then you'll get out of jail. So God has given us these material bodies because we're criminals. And He's given us other things so we can utilize them in His service, so we can become good citizens, become eligible to get out of jail. But He hasn't given these things so we can become a better criminal. Steal more from God. Otherwise we'll be perpetually put into one jail cell after another, according to what our activities are. But sure, He's giving us things so we can utilize them in His service, become eligible to come free again. Just like someone may be very pious and utilize many things in God's service, or at least piously, and they're given fabulous amounts of money in their next lifetime as a result of their pious activity. But if they don't utilize it in God's service, at least according to the laws of Dharma, then, as it says in the Bhagavatam, it's like they're given a king may have a big crown, but if he's not bowed down before the lotus feet of Krishna, the crown will simply sink him deeper into the ocean of material existence. So to have a lot of wealth and not utilizing Krishna's service is very dangerous. Like the Nala Kuvara Mani Griva. They were given many material assets, but Narada Muni sort of degraded them. He made them into trees so they can rectify themselves. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grantharaj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaura Premanande.